Vem magalenha, rojão, traz a lenha pro fogão, vem fazer armação. Hoje é um dia de sol, alegria de coió, é curtir o verão.
Vem magalenha, rojão, traz a lenha pro fogão, vem fazer armação. Hoje é um dia de sol, alegria de coió, é curtir o verão.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
From Salvador, Bahia, Brazil, that's musician, songwriter, composer, producer, and actor Carlinhos Brown with Magalena. Brown is credited with radically changing Brazilian and popular music with his Tropicália, a movement that blends traditional Bahia percussion, rhythms, and musical patterns with others from the African diaspora. Born Antonio Carlos Santos de Freitas, he took the name Brown, being inspired by Henry Box Brown, who in 1849, at the age of 33, escaped from slavery in Virginia by shipping himself in a wooden crate to abolitionists awaiting his arrival in Philadelphia. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday, a major week of news, and I'm sure they will turn up in our discussions today, the things that you found significant and your take on them, and things that you may want to introduce to us for further discussion and debate. This is our forum where we gather our brains, what's left of them, depending on the week. Whatever is left, we gather them and we trade our ideas and opinions and observations and analyses here on Free Your Mind Friday. 888-874-4888 is the number to call and be part of this wonderful mix. Add your unique flavor to this. I call it a special, delicious, intellectual soup. 888-874-4888. Jason from Mount Vernon, you get to start us off today.
Well, good afternoon, Latrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And how are you?
Better days. I don't normally call on a routine basis. I've been listening if I can, and I've been working, but I think I should weigh in on this week because it's been such a volatile week. And where can we begin? You have a debunked, dysfunctional electoral candidate process to a halftime Super Bowl by Beyoncé Black Panther's performance that seems that white people are offended by. So there is so many chock full of nuts of things to talk about. But what I would like to talk about is the comparison and the contrast of the federal government's attention from Ferguson as opposed to the deliberate poisoning of contaminated water of Flint, Michigan, and how the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, is being distracted and not focusing on Flint, Michigan, but focusing on Ferguson.
Well, go ahead. What are your thoughts?
We have a situation where white privilege has been such a long, pervasive element of life that when equality or the attention for justice is rendered, white people think it's discrimination. They use words of art of reverse discrimination, things of that sort. The predominantly African-American population in Ferguson has been going through a great deal of trouble, being taxed and being monitored and being imprisoned, and they seem to be at a wit's end. In Flint, Michigan, the predominantly African-American population there have been at a wit's end with contaminated water. No one has offered a suggestion of going to the public entity risk management authority. The public entity risk management authority is the benchmark of all municipalities, all cities, to understand, I mean, to address any injury that a public official takes and injures the community. Simply write a business letter format or a postcard to the public management, public risk management authority, and you will find, get a whole bunch of answers, maybe no answers, about who was accountable. When you research this and you get a reply back from the public entity management authority, public entity risk management authority, I think it's called PRIMA. So it's Public Risk Entity Management Authority, or the state, each state has one, Victims Compensation Government Claims Review Board, or Victims Compensation Government Claims Board. You write a simple business letter or a postcard saying that I'm a tax-paying citizen or so-called citizen, and I've been victimized. Ferguson, Flint, Detroit, Chicago, L.A., New Orleans, Atlanta, you know the drill. You get correspondence back from these entities which will throw the officials under the bus, and they will claim that they're not liable. They have no insurance to cover them. Once you get these letters in the mail, you file your federal complaint and sue the individual in his private capacity, the mayor of Flint, Michigan, the governor of that state, or Ferguson, and you find how fast their insurance policies are dropped. You'll find how fast they're ready to correct themselves. There's no need to go protesting, hopping, and skipping in the streets. These are corrective measures. There's so many other things I can talk about, but this is pretty much a key thing that is like a gem and a good piece of arsenal that the people people nationwide can do and to address any matter that they feel they've been victimized by.
Thank you very much for getting us started today and for sharing that information, Jason.
You're welcome.
We are still in New York with Joel. You're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How are you?
Fine, thank you, Joel. How are you doing?
I'm good. I hope you had a very good week.
It's been quite a week, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's quite true, quite true. I'd like to, the last time I called, I think I said that I was rather remiss in not speaking about the economy. Very few of us really do in any kind of analytical way, so I want to do it again today. But before I do that, I just would like to inform all of your listeners of a biography that I've been reading of, wait for it, Hillary Clinton. And it's really a remarkable biography written by Diane Johnstone, who is a veteran radical journalist who's been stationed in Paris for many, many decades, and wrote, I think, one of the best books on the Yugoslavian war and the Clinton role in that, the Bill Clinton role in that, some years ago.
I had been in touch with her. I was in touch with her several months ago, and we just could not get our times right because that I'm on, it's dinner. Paris.
Yeah. but I really recommend, I picked up the book and I just can't put it down. It's so compelling. And what it really shows, I think, is a marriage of really petty criminality, the kind of which that Kim Ives has been, analyzing, the role of the Clinton people in Haiti, their slush funds and all the rest. Marrying a personal corruption with institutional corruption. And the other thing that I'm getting out of this book, which is rather alarming, I feel like almost emailing her and asking her if I'm reading something into it, but I don't think I am because she's such a wonderful writer, is that I think she's really, really worried that a Clinton presidency, and it really looks like, you know, unless, you know, they can change the whole structural process of elections in the Democratic Party, that she has a good chance of being the nominee, even though so many things have happened, that she's going to take us to war. She has never seen a weapon system or a war that she hasn't liked. And so I think she's really worried that we'll see a confrontation over the Ukraine or something else. I mean, one of the things that happened this week that no one has talked about that is really alarming is that the United States announced that it's bringing weapon systems and announced that large numbers of NATO troops will be stationed along the Russian frontier. Now, in all of the decades of the Cold War, when you had something like 100 divisions of Warsaw Pact troops facing off against NATO troops and against U.S. nuclear weapons in Europe, you never had NATO troops or American troops stationed contiguous to the Soviet Union. So this is a major provocation, and it confirms some of our biggest fears. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. I'm really sorry I got off on that. I would just briefly like to talk about what's going on in the markets. And we really are right now in a crisis again. It looks like we're in the beginning of a worldwide economic recession. And we should keep in mind that when economists use the word recession, it doesn't mean that it's not taking place in the midst of a depression. For instance, in 1937, when there was a downturn in the American economy, historians always talk about this as a return of recessionary activity, but it was in the middle of a depression, so it just exacerbated all of the horrors of a depression. So I think we should keep that in mind. And what's going on right now, Utrice, is that financial markets all over the world are increasingly chaotic. They're either retreating or they're plunging. I think it seems pretty obvious that there's going to be a gigantic market crash in the coming future, and it may have possibly started now. And the reason for this is very simple. Bubbles always burst. I've never known, I don't think anyone has ever known or ever thought about a bubble without thinking of it bursting. And bubbles arise when asset prices inflate above what underlying income can sustain. It's as simple as that. And in the 18th century, there was something called, you may have heard about this, the tulip bubble that burst in Holland. In fact, all over Europe, investors were investing in tulips. And one day, Europeans woke up one morning and discovered that tulips were simply just flowers after all, and the whole market crashed. But today, the public has yet to wake up to the mathematical reality that over $200 trillion in debt and perhaps another $500 trillion of underfunded liabilities really cannot ever be paid back under current terms. And because of this, the central banks have tried to modify the phrase under current terms by debasing the currency, these obligations, you know, via inflation. And try as they have, they've really been unable to create the sort of Goldilocks low-level inflation that would slowly, I think, sublimate that massive pile of debt into something more manageable. And widespread inflation, let me just explain what I mean by that. Inflation is not really a bad thing if it's married to increasing wages. That's what we had throughout the boom in the United States from 45 to 75. Everybody complained about the fact that things were costing more, but wages were rising consistently during that period. Now, widespread inflation hasn't happened. Why not? Because economists have failed to note that the plan of handling all of their newly printed money to the very wealthy elite, while a very socially popular thing to do among the cocktail party set, has simply concentrated the inflation to the kinds of assets that the money set buys, like private jets, penthouse apartments, fine art, gemstones, et cetera, et cetera. So their efforts have produced price inflation, but the wrong sort. And even worse, all the central banks have really accomplished is to assure that when the deflation monster finally arrives, it will be gigantic, highly damaging, and possibly uncontrollable. And, you know, I feel that, you know, that my worries about this next crash will involve I'm so worried because I know that the next crash is going to involve record-setting losses, enormous human misery due to lost jobs and dashed dreams, and possibly, as I alluded to before, even the prospect of war and serious social unrest. So I want to be as blunt as possible. Pardon me. The next
crash. Well, actually, you pointed two things that historically have gone hand in hand. You have the prospect of war coinciding with economic downturns, and one seems always to depend on the other, because there has always been the pattern that the economy improves when the United States is at war. So the fact that you're seeing both these things evolving at the same time, and many people have been talking about it now for months, that there is a crisis pending and impending, and it's going to be a doozy. But we're seeing also the alignment, the astral alignment of war and economic downturn, except now it's seriously global. Thank you, Joel, for your call today.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much. From Dallas, Sarah, you're on the air.
Well, greetings to you, Utrecht. How are we doing today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Well, I am not doing too bad out here, Utrecht. It's getting ready to be allergy season, so I guess we didn't even have a...
Allergies, have you?
Yeah, past winter and just went right into spring. We didn't even have any winter out here because it's been running like in the 70s. But let me say a greetings to you once again, and as well as to the PRN listening audience, and wish you all to have an enjoyable weekend.
Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome, Utrecht, and I'm glad that you are not hanging. We got that rope cut. So.
Not hanging. I'm good.
Yes, ma'am. But to free my mind and to touch on a couple of topics that you mentioned, because your show was very most informative all of this week. And one of the things, you're welcome. And Joel had mentioned about the crashing of the economy and what's going on in the financial sector. But we need to call names. We don't need to just put things nebulously out here and just say what's causing it. Who is responsible for this economy? You see, when we talk about global white supremacy, we need to put names and we need to put faces to it. Because who controls the economy of the world? The Monetary Fund, the IMF, and all of these other funds. Who is in charge of it? It's Europeans. They're the ones who have put themselves in charge over the global economy, and they have totally wrecked it, whether it was done on purpose or whether it was done by accident that they didn't know what they were doing. It is still their fault. They have wrecked it. But as usual, they're going to find other people to scapegoat, which is what normally happens. They're going to go around the world and find people of color and say, okay, maybe it's the Africans, they're not managing their economy, or the Chinese, or the people in these Caribbean countries, or whatever it is, it's their fault. But they're never willing to take personal responsibility. This is something that has always been dumped onto so-called people of color, black people in particular, about taking personal responsibility. But the people who like to put out this mantra, they don't follow it themselves. They never take responsibility for what they do. It's always somebody else's fault. Now, this situation with the voting, and as you were saying, that we are being used as kindling. And as you stated, kindling does not benefit the people who are being used as fire logs. It's for somebody to come in and enjoy the warmth of the fire once they stroke the flames. And black people are not tired of themselves continuously being used in this political system as political football. We have no stake in the game. We have all of these mouthpieces that run around here to get their cut for to say they're representing black people, using us as backdrops, when in actuality they're only out here to represent their financial well-being. They don't give a darn about us. It is always okay for them to come up and say, okay, you know, I'm representing the black caucus, I'm representing the NAACP and all these other organizations that they put fronts and city around. But they don't, because when is the last time have they taken a polling of black people within their respective areas to say, okay, what exactly are you looking for in a candidate? Let me get your effort, because it has always been the poor who have always been on the front lines, so that a few status blacks could get these positions and think that they're doing anything. They haven't done anything. We looked around the civil rights movement. Who was on the front line? The poor, the so-called uneducated. They're the ones who was out there. These educated status Negroes, they didn't do anything. But what happened? They're the ones who end up reaping the benefit of what the poor people went out there and they suffered, died, and shed blood for. They're the ones who end up doing it. Because all these status Negroes are up there, the Condoleezza Rices and all of them, she said her people, they moved away to Colorado. They didn't have anything, they didn't see anything wrong, because as far as they're concerned, their middle-class black lifestyle, they were doing great. So it wasn't a problem for them, but look what she benefits from, the affirmative action, all of these processes that people like Fannie Lou Hamer and Ella Baker and all of these people are out here in the front line doing. She benefits from off of that system. And it's the same thing we are seeing now with these so-called black electorate who are running around here. You know, black political power is pretty much dead. It's flatlined. We just need to go ahead and pull this plug. Instead of having this patient lingering on, suffering, we need to just go ahead and be kind and just euthanize them or put them out their misery. Because that is essentially what we are. We have these people around here doing us more harm than any good by saying these idiotic things like John Lewis and all of them. John Lewis is a relic. I can tell you, coming from Atlanta and his 5th district, it's a total disgrace. This man needs to be taken out of Congress. He needs to get his nice little retirement check. I let him sit him down somewhere. Let him go work for the King Center or whatever, because he's stuck in the civil rights mode. He's still stuck 50 years ago. So let him go on up there in Atlanta and work for the King Center. But he is not effective as a politician, and I'm tired of one thing you treat. With black people, we always say that there's a separation of church and state, that there's supposed to be a separation. But in the black community, there's no separation, because most of our politicians that we have, they're wearing two hats. They're preachers on the weekends when they come home to their home district, and then they're also politicians. So they're commingling the two. So you want to ask, well, exactly who are they representing? Because there's a church within the state. They're not doing anything that's beneficial for black people, like the Bobby Rush and all these other relics from the bygone days who might have done some good back then. But they're running around here, you know, running off of the fumes of what they did in the past and saying this is what they did. And last but not least, you treat, I'm going to say this. I am tired of these so-called liberal and progressive whites who always like to talk about what they did in the civil rights movement as some kind of crutch for them within which to say, okay, see, black people, I'm done with you. I was back there. I did all of these things and blah, blah, blah. This is very condescending. You treat them as borderline racist, what they are doing. Because if you say that this system of imbalance that we are living under is unjust, then what you are doing is supposed to rectify this, put a balance in the system. I don't need for you to be coming out here running on that 50 years there to say, okay, like Bernie Sanders and all of them saying this is what they did. Because it's the liberals and the progressives who are the ones moving into these black communities and causing the gentrification. It's not the racist Republicans who are doing it. It's these same liberals who say they're down with you, we're going to hang out at the club, we're going to do barbecue. They're the ones who are gentrifying Harlem, Philadelphia, Atlanta, all of these areas. Are these same liberal progressive whites who are pulling you out, skyrocketing the rent so you can't afford to live there. So think about that when you're talking about these liberal progressives.
Okay. Well, you gave us an earful today, Sarah. Thank you so much for your contribution today. Much to think about. Thank you so much. Let's go to New York again. New York is winning today. What's going on? Is there anybody else, any place in the country? Patricia, you are on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. Good afternoon to the PRN family. And I want to tag on to what Sister Sarah just said. I don't watch the news ever. My news is PRN.com, Monday through Friday, Eutrice Lead. That's my news.
Thank you.
And so I was visiting with a friend yesterday. It just so happened to be 6 p.m. and her television was on. We were sitting in the living room and the news came on, and the first segment had to do with Hillary's important endorsement. And there are all these members of the Congressional Black Caucus. And it elicited my intestines reacted. and it did not react well. But and you treat this as serious business. So in any
event, I've heard somebody say that their intestines reacted. Well, okay.
But what we who listen to you we're the choir. We talk to one another, and so at this point, my role is to expand this knowledge to others. And I happen to read a Michelle Alexander on the Native Nation website a few days ago. She wrote about why Hillary doesn't deserve the black vote. And she actually did a wonderful job. It's about 13 pages. And she proceeded to write an overview of Bill Clinton's years and Hillary's support of Bill Clinton's years and what that meant for black people, for black families, for black communities. And so what the Congressional Black Caucus PAC did yesterday cannot go unanswered. So what I have done is I have copied all of those pages, and I am sending it to every Congressional Black Caucus member. So if they think that we in the community are uninformed, uneducated, unenlightened, on anything, they are seriously wrong. Because she thinks, and of course the media is projecting, that all these black people are going to come to her rescue. Well, the problem, and, you know, it remains to be seen. Maybe she knows something that we don't know. But I don't know anyone. You know, they're talking about the black community support is in the 65 age group and over. Well, that's me. And that's my friends. And I don't know anyone. Maybe my, you know, as my son would say, Ma, you special. Maybe my little circle is special. But I don't know anybody in my age group. And the last I looked, we were all people with melanin. Nobody I know is voting for her. So I am going to share this with them so that they know there are people out there who find what they did yesterday repulsive and repugnant. Because we have a responsibility to enlighten those who don't listen to this show.
Well, thank you. I mean, as I said myself, this is just revolting on so many levels that these folks could get up. I was going to play the entire news conference, but it was just so sickening.
Oh, I could. Oh.
You could take this only in a couple of, you know, very small bites. It is just, you wonder, are these people even remotely connected to history at all? Yes. Or is it just that they're so shameless and they're such toadies that they cast aside any obligation to weigh the pros and cons and before they put themselves and all that their organization supposedly stands for and the people it supposedly represents, that these things matter less than basically pleasing the Clinton Democratic machine.
You know, I thought of Shirley Chisholm, whose slogan was unbossed and unbought. And that's what I am going to open with. Shirley Chisholm's legacy is not your behavior.
I'm glad you raised that name, Shirley Chisholm. I would tell you that many of the elected officials today, the more senior ones, themselves were against Shirley Chisholm and did everything possible to railroad her candidacy. The same ones who are standing by Hillary Clinton today did everything possible to torpedo Shirley Chisholm's candidacy for president. So even that history, they hope we forget.
Well, I am going to make certain that they know that it is not forgotten.
Thank you for your call today.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you so much. From Berkeley, Harfrey, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrice.
Hey, Harry, how you doing?
Pretty good. Well, as you know, Sunday is Valentine's Day, and I want to wish you and your vast PRN listening audience, happy Valentine's Day.
Well, thank you so much for that. Lots of love.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's a special day that we're celebrating. We celebrate the love for each other. And this year, I want to send a special happy Valentine's Day shout-out to Mother Earth, because Earth is Mama. And the fossil fuel industry has really abused our mother by drilling into her like a mosquito for oil, by fracking her for methane, which poisons our groundwater supply, mining her for coal, which is the largest producer of greenhouse gas like carbon dioxide. And so when we burn these fossil fuels into the air, they're overheating both our atmosphere and oceans, and they cause climate destabilization. And as you know, 2016 was the hottest year on record. So I feel that Valentine's Day is the perfect time to show our Mother Earth how much we love her by putting solar panels on our rooftops, which will definitely help to slow climate change. And I feel it's time to get star-powered. I say, let's get solar.
Thank you very much, Harvey, and thanks so much for your kind wishes.
Thank you, Tracy.
I return them to you, too. Thank you so much. Jay from New York, you're bringing up the New York quota here. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, Tracy. How are you? Hope you're feeling well, my sister.
Fine, thank you. I'm doing fine. How about you?
I'm doing excellent. Listen, it was just an absolutely embarrassment by them CBC members. John, I've been beat over my head too long, Lewis, and Charlie, I've done nothing, and Harlem Rangel. You know, it's kind of sad that at this stage of the game, men have to disparage other men like Bernie Sanders in regards to what his role was in the civil rights movement or not. At this present time, I could care less. It doesn't really make a difference because Bill and Hillary Clinton were supposedly a part of the civil rights movement, and you can see the damage that they've done to us as African Americans. You know what I mean? So let's be honest. I mean, I was listening to your program earlier this week talking about Hillary and some of the things that she's done. But it seems like most people don't want to do the investigation. You know, I hope that you would just do one thing, and this is very important, Utrecht. You need to do the research and collect all of the dates that you've done programming on Hillary Clinton and pile it into maybe email or something that could be shared with these bumbling idiots who are on her bandwagon, because you've done probably the most clearest case study on how wicked and evil this woman is and the crimes that she has committed against people of color and American people who are happen to be white. So I'm hoping that you could compile this information, because I'm being honest with you. I'm tired of telling people to go to the archives, listen to the shows that Utrecht Lead has done on this character called Hillary Clinton. So I would hope that maybe you can do this, because unfortunately, I haven't kept track of all of these dates. It's been so many, you know what I mean, that if we could just compile it so that we could push this agenda forward to educate people on the absolute wickedry of this woman. Because, mind you, Utrecht, nobody wants to even address the fact when I bring up what her and Bill have done to the Haitian people and what they continuously do to the Haitian people with the assistance of a brother. They seem to make it seem like I'm crazy. And I tell them, just check the facts. That alone should keep that woman out the presidency. That alone. Then she talked yesterday in a debate about Flint. All she's doing is pandering to the people of Flint for votes. Then she talks about one of the most murderous individuals on the planet that set forward her to being who she is, a warmonger. Henry, I'll kill you at the drop of a dime, Kissinger. I mean, it's amazing how people do not connect the dots with who has influenced this warmonger. She's more dangerous in a way than Donald Trump is, because I think people are just naive to the fact that she is who she is. So I would just like to say thank you, Utrecht. I'm trying to push the word out. I need to get these dates in order, hopefully with your assistance, so we could do a mass email blast or do something on Twitter or somewhere to get these clowns to take a real honest look at Hillary Clinton and then be able to challenge Charlie Rangel, a man who's left Harlem in despair after 40 years. And I know it because I've lived in his district for all of those 40 years, Utrecht, and it's worse now than it was when I was a kid.
Well, thank you, Jay, for your call. You seem to be giving me an assignment here.
Well,
but you know what the thing is,
that is worthy. We need
this.
I mean, the work that you have done, and I'm not trying to boast you or anything like this, but your work, Utrecht, is the most compelling and complete analysis on this warmonger that has ever been done. I mean, and all of these news cable channels, they don't even do an inch of the work that you've done.
I explained why. I told you the reason that Hillary's getting the kind of coverage that she is getting, and it has to do with money. You know, this is not journalism. Don't fool yourself to think that you turn on CNN or NBC or whoever and you're going to get news. No, you're getting what they want you to think is news, but it's not. It's just in this election cycle, it's about money dictating everything, shaping our views. And this is why I keep saying, always be careful about the information, because there is a method to the madness here. But thanks so much, Jay, for your call today. Let's go to Los Angeles. DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrecht. How are you feeling?
Fine, thank you. What have you to say today?
Good. Well, I want to say hello to all the PRN listeners as well. Hope everyone has a good weekend.
Thank you for acknowledging. Thank you so much.
Sure. I wanted to make a couple of brief points about current events, and I'm going to be brief today, and then I wanted to say a little bit about the conference call you and I have been emailing back and forth about. We won't give out full
details. Let's talk about the 2 points, the conference call you and I will have to talk a bit more before we let the public know.
Okay. All right. So I totally agree, of course, with Jay, Patricia, and Sarah about this woman. And some of this is going to sound like a broken record, but I generally, the CBC endorsement of her shows exactly what I say all the time. These politicians, and that's what they are, politicians who get elected, don't give a dang about what we care about, what we want, what our opinion is, or anything. As Patricia indicated, they're trying to make it seem like black people over 65 are supporting Hillary in a massive way. I don't believe it. I think this is all propaganda. So what we have to do, number one, is stop looking for leaders and stop trusting these people. And my opinion is we need to stop participating in their phony federal elections. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. They don't represent us. I was watching a little bit of the coverage of that debate yesterday on the Young Turks was covering it. And I like watching them because they make a lot of jokes and do all this other stuff, but they actually do journalism. So what I noticed was that the whole night long, Hillary was trying to bait Bernie into criticizing Obama. And the reason for that is because she knows a huge percentage of the black community still endorses or or loves Obama, and we're headed for South Carolina, and that's the South, and they absolutely love Obama down there. So she's trying the whole debate to get him to criticize Obama. And basically, Bernie didn't go for it, and he basically was way more aggressive than I've seen him in a long time. And he basically told her throughout the debate that he agreed with Obama on everything except for, you know, and he didn't vote against the Iraq War. And then his best comment of the night, I thought, was, there's one person on this stage up here, because she was saying that he's always criticizing President Obama and all this. And he goes, there's one person on this stage up who ran against President Obama in 2008 and criticized him massively, and it's not me. And he pointed to her. So, kind of backfired. I thought that was really funny.
He stumped her with that comment. But at the same time, Bernie Sanders still is troubling in the sense that we're not getting from him a critique of Hillary Clinton. We're
right.
getting basically his explanation as to what he envisions, which is good, but he does not make enough of an effort to differentiate himself and to call into question her foreign policy, which is massively wrong in so many ways, the domestic policies of her husband, because he's already said, well, you know, it's Hillary Clinton who's running, Bill Clinton isn't. Well, she claims, and she openly says, how this is part of her experience. The experience basically being an advisor to her husband, and in turn will have her husband be an advisor to her. So it's a fair game. But he never fully brings that into focus and puts it under the microscope. He has yet to put her under the microscope. So this is problematic to me.
You make some very good points, and let's not get this twisted. I don't support either one of these candidates, but what I did like was that he called her out several times, especially on the Henry Kissinger thing. He said almost exactly what Jay
he did do
said,
that.
And that was a wonderful moment for me. So I wanted to just say that about that, and then I want to move on to the second point. I don't know if you heard, but Monday morning there was a teenager killed in Austin, Texas, by a police officer. Apparently, he was running around the neighborhood in a neighboring apartment complex, and he was chasing somebody around or having an altercation, and he was completely naked when the police officer showed up. Clearly unarmed. And this teenager, I forget his name. Do you know his name? Joseph...
I don't know the name, but I know the case.
David Joseph. So Officer Freeman shows up, and long story short, his end of the story is that he charged at me and I felt threatened. So this is an officer with a bulletproof vest, mace, a nightstick, and a gun, and he felt threatened by a completely naked 17-year-old with no weapon. I want to get at the point, though, that black people, especially, and this is apparently a black neighborhood, stop calling the police for everything. That needs to be an absolute last resort. In this situation, I'm from the old school. Black community, black people just have no gumption anymore. If this situation happened 40, 50 years ago, some of the men in the neighborhood would have got together, went out there and tackled that boy down, took him to the emergency room or the mental hospital or something, and got it taken care of that way. We're too quick to pick up the phone and expect the system to handle our kids. This situation, he didn't have to die.
No, he didn't.
You know, and
this, again, we see the pattern across the country where the police basically look at all these incidents as a form of target practice. They shoot to kill. And in situations where one assumes training would indicate that that is not the approach to take in a situation where you see somebody acting erratically, clearly not in his right mind, is naked, He's running around, And there ought to have been an entirely different approach, not only from the police officer who did the shooting, but from the supervisors and the supervising officer. So, you know, there are so many shootings that occurred in this past week. It's hard to even keep up with them, and I'm trying to prepare a program on it because, again, we are stuck with this issue, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. It's getting worse.
I have to point out to you, Therese, that the officer in this case, which gives it a little twist, he's a black officer. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm a black man, 44 years old. I have a 17-year-old son. That's like me being afraid of my son when he's in his underwear or completely naked and doesn't have any weapon. I mean, what is wrong with our culture when our black men are afraid of our black teenagers this way? I don't understand that.
Thanks, DX, for your call today. From Lawrence, New York, Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Ms. Therese.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm awesome. Thank you for asking, and hello to the PRN listeners and staff.
Thank you so much.
I guess on a few points, one caller mentioned lawsuits as opposed to protesting in the street. And I have to say that I agree with him 100%. And while bringing some public awareness is important at times, I think that focusing our energy on the legal system and using their laws against them in order to get justice, but also at some point, we have to start thinking about using their laws to change some of their laws. And as far as these wars are concerned, someone also mentioned wars, Hillary Clinton's, you know, lust for them. And she's pretty much just a symptom, like most other things, of white supremacy. And I think by the time we hear them speak of war, I think at times it's already too late. At times when I think more of that conversation should be happening, I don't go to church, but I think we should be holding churches responsible for their congregations. If and I'm not a religious person, but if you're not supposed to kill, then you shouldn't be taking a job that will ask you, will you kill? Are you willing to? And then checking off the yes box. That in itself is a problem that I have with Christianity, with religion in general. I have a problem authenticating religion that, I guess, permits military membership. And as far as the elections are concerned, I would also like to say, being that this is Free Your Mind Friday, that maybe we should consider freeing our minds from the institutions that were given to us by these white supremacists. And that being, again, religion, number one. I am anti-religion, even though it has served our community in certain ways in the past. And I can't take away those deeds and what inspired them, but I think that we need to, we've learned what we could and used what we could, and I think we need to move on to a new teacher and new inspiration at this point.
Let me ask you then, Chris. Yes. Let's say that a person's religious or spiritual leanings, how do you square the right, if you will, of a person to pursue a spiritual path with what you're saying as the overarching control of government? Are you saying that a person should not, or the larger good should supersede the individual desire for a spiritual life?
No. What I'm saying is black Americans engaged in Christianity and are actually using and I'm going here, number one, because you told me to go get a book that I went and got. And
what was that book?
I think it's Professor Amos, Blueprint for Black Power.
Yes, yes.
That big book. And you know I work like 70 hours a week, and I'm getting through that book.
Good for you.
And he brought up a very important point, that religion that came from white people, we tend to associate God with the white people who gave us this religion. And when you go against white people, if you have this Christian DNA in your system, you are actually going against God. If you go against someone like Hillary Clinton, someone like Bill Clinton, you're going against the provider of your belief system. You're going against the original alleged members of this. When we identify with their institutions and belief systems, we place them in such a high place that we can't internalize replacing them. We can't internalize removing them from power because we legitimize their power through worshiping their gods and through voting in their political process.
Right. He was addressing the question of the role of religion as a tool of oppression, psychological oppression. And this is exactly the point that he was making, that in some cases, religion has been used very effectively and over a long period of time to psychologically reorient people to the point of literally disembodying themselves from themselves, to tear them away from what they should know as their natural identities. They're given a new identity through these religious reorientation. And
I refer to it as a removal from reality.
That's correct. That's correct. Okay. So why Christianity and not any other?
Christianity as opposed to, say, Buddhism or any other religious persuasion.
That's
a good argument to have with my immediate family. Excuse me for just saying Christianity. I thought I put in there also religion in general. I think we need to move away from it. Like, if you want to believe in something, I think you're entitled to do that. But we as we currently believe, we believe something that was given to us by people who killed us and enslaved us. And we cannot move forward, in my opinion. We have not moved forward far enough.
Let me ask you a provocative question.
Like, with the Democratic Party and Christianity and Islam and Judaism, we have not moved far enough with these systems in place. So if we are going to move, we can't bring heavy bag with us. Some stuff has to go out. We cannot pack that heavy. We've got to leave some of the stuff behind to move on.
So you have to leave some things behind.
Some things have to go, especially those things that we have absolute proof have been used to enslave us, to justify enslaving us, and they continue to confuse and enslave us with these very same systems. If we have proof of that, and it outweighs the proof of our progress, then we need to find, in my opinion, we need to find something new to help us move into someplace new.
Well, thank you, Chris, for your contribution today. I really appreciate your call. And I'm glad that you're reading Amos Wilson's massive tome, Blueprint for Black Power. It's a great book. It's almost 1,000 pages. It's a fantastic book. It's too much book in one place, but that's not a complaint. That's a gift. Thank you. So let's see. We have time for a fast call, and that would be from Vincent. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I do agree that there are so many killings of black men these days, it's hard to keep up. But one thing we can focus on for today is a minor victory forward for the family of Akai Gurley out in Brooklyn, the county of Kings. His murderer, police officer Lang, was convicted, I believe, of manslaughter in the second degree and something else, and is possibly facing 15 years in jail. So we could follow that case with the spirit that it won't be overturned in the appeals process of the Second Department in New York State. Have a good weekend.
Well, thank you. Just before you go, though, Vincent, one thing you should note there is that there was a change in the prosecutor's office. Could you talk about that? Do you see that as important?
Well, I don't know
too much about the district attorney in Brooklyn.
Well, the district attorney, he is a black male, and that might seem enlightening and spiritually motivating to those who are into the legal system or learning about it. And maybe that's something that needs to be done in certain other districts as far as district attorneys. We probably need different a district attorney in these such cases, possibly a special prosecutor.
Well, the interesting thing is that this district attorney, Ken Thompson, has done some other things. He has reviewed some old cases. He has thrown out many cases that were suspect. He has brought to account police officers and detectives who were who helped the DA's office, the previous DA's office, obtain convictions in cases with manufactured evidence and with lies and with false accusations and so forth. He has done quite a bit. Do you give him any credit for that?
Oh, yes. I think I remember something like that. I think one of the officers was a Scarsetta. Don't get me, please correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's correct.
A number of cases like that where officers pretty much, I don't know if this is the proper word, but purged themselves in cases. And there were a lot of people of color, mainly black people, who were convicted of crimes they never even did or were arrested for things they never even did.
That's correct. So, in a sense, could you at least see that there was a benefit here to, and perhaps that attitude that this DA took sent a new signal about the seriousness of the prosecutor's office? And by the way, the previous prosecutor, Joe Hines, who I knew quite well, Joe Hines himself was under prosecution. So it's an interesting change of attitude, and I'm wondering, it's just conjecture at this point, I have no proof of it, but I suspect that there might have been a change in attitude with this DA's appointment and with the moves he has made to show that he is interested in justice or attempting to deliver justice as a prosecutor in Brooklyn. So I don't know whether that has any correlation with the successful prosecution of this case, of this officer who shot and killed Akai Gurley, who happened to be coming down the stairwell of the housing project where he lived. The elevator was not working. The officer, who's a rookie, comes upon him and shoots him. And that was bad enough. After shooting Akai Gurley, his first thing was what? What did he do, Vincent?
I believe I heard he called his PBA representative of some sort.
That's correct. Rather than administer aid to the dying man, he decided he would call his union rep to figure out what he was supposed to do to protect himself in the first stages of what eventually became a mortality. Thank you so much for your call today. I appreciate it. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I hope we learned a lot from folks freeing their minds on this Friday. Coming up next, Guns and Butter. Stay tuned for that. And you can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know how you think about this program. I happen to think really highly of it because I see everyone making a strong effort to keep the level of conversation at its highest levels, and I appreciate that. A pleasure and a great privilege always to be in your company. This weekend, surround yourself with people who bring good things and positive dimension to your life. See you Monday. Bye-bye.